In this section, we'll take an in-depth look at the interdependent nature of life and see how we can fulfill our four human needs and enhance our four human endowments through interdependent achievement.
Effective interdependence is core to the issue of time management. Now, traditional time management, if it does deal with interdependence, deals with it in a transactional way. Now, this transactional approach grows out of the mechanical and controlling and managing things paradigm. People are seen as bionic units to whom we can delegate to get more done, or they're seen as interruptions to be handled efficiently so that we can get back to our schedule. But fourth generation interdependence is not transactional, it's transformational. It literally changes those who are party to it. It takes into consideration the full reality of the uniqueness and capacity of each individual and the rich potential of creating synergistic third alternatives that are far better than any individual could ever come up with on their own. Fourth generation interdependence is the richness of relationships. It's the adventure of discovery. It's the spontaneity and deep fulfillment that comes when we put people ahead of schedules. It's the joy of creating together what did not exist before. This interdependence is the ultimate moving of the fulcrum. It's the increase of creativity, capacity, and production that comes from combining the energy and talents of many people in synergistic ways. As you think about what first things are in your life, how many of those things involve relationships with other people? It's our experience that almost without exception, everything people identify as really important has to do with other people. Even those who list something such as health or economic security usually do so because they want to have the resources to enjoy life with their family and friends. Our greatest joy and our greatest pain in life come in our relationship with other people. Life, by nature, is interdependent. Our roles are interdependent. We're husbands, wives, parents, friends, bosses, employees, co-workers, associates, community members, citizens. Quality in almost any role in life involves a relationship with at least one other individual. Our accomplishments are interdependent. You know, we look back in history and we tend to say that one particular person invented or discovered something. But the reality is that most great achievements were not made in a vacuum. The individual who receives the credit usually stands on the shoulders of many people who went before, clearing the path, leading the way, finding things that didn't work, so that eventually somebody could find the one thing that would work. Even the fulfillment of these four fundamental needs and capacities that we've been talking about is interdependent. To live is to have physical health and economic security. Now, where would we be without doctors and hospitals, penicillin, health insurance? We get our paycheck because what we do in some way affects the lives of other people. We spend our paycheck on things that represent the labor of other people. To love is by definition interdependent. It involves relationships with other people, it involves belonging, and it's based on one of the major themes of all wisdom literature, that's reciprocity or the golden rule. To learn is to grow, to feel ourselves expanding. How often does learning come as we read books that were written by other people? We attend seminars given by other people. We sit in classes that are taught by other people. How many times do we get insights as we interact in group situations? Or how many of our own ideas really grow out of the ideas of other people? To leave a legacy is also by definition interdependent. It's contributing to society. Contributing in meaningful ways to the lives of other people. The world we live in is the legacy of those who have gone before us. And the choices we make in this world create a legacy for those who will follow. The fact is, we are better together than we are alone. And humility comes as we realize that no man is an island. No one person has all the talents, all the ideas, all the capacity to perform the functions of the whole. Vital to quality of life is our ability to work together, to learn from each other, and to help each other grow. Now, when we try to satisfy our basic needs and fulfill our capacities through this independent achievement, life sometimes seems like an hour in a huge smorgasbord. There's only so much time, so we have to maximize our satisfaction, sample as much as we can, and we rush through the line, grabbing as much variety as possible. We become gluttons of sensations and experiences. We rush to live. It seems like maintaining a healthy lifestyle takes too much time and effort. So we eat what we want, we do what we want, we burn the candle at both ends, and then we depend on the medical profession to pick up the pieces. And economic security becomes maximizing the bottom line regardless of meaning or means. We rush to love. We have hit-and-run relationships, often leaving broken bodies and broken lives strewn along the path. We want the benefits of marriage, but we don't make the emotional commitment to live a life of rich interdependence, of selfless service, of sensitivity, of continuous improvement of character to make it grow. We bring children into the world, but we're not committed to the tremendous time and effort it takes to teach and train them, to love and to listen. We may sample a few of the fruits from the relationships closest to us, but it seems like there's no time to reach out to others and to love on a broader basis. We rush to learn. There's no time for deep conversation or interacting with other people in meaningful ways. Learning is superficial. We're into skills and methods and techniques without really understanding the principles that could empower us to act in a variety of situations. And we rush to leave a token legacy. We send in a few dollars here, a few dollars there, and it gives us a fix of contribution for a moment or two. But it's not lasting. There's no real commitment, no overriding sense of deep purpose and contribution in our lives. Now, many social scientists and commentators have pointed out that this kind of fast-paced, independent paradigm has created a real imbalance in our society. In order to get more golden eggs, we're killing the goose that produces them. We're so busy consuming that we don't take care of our capacity to produce. And we see evidence of it all around us, in the national debt, in healthcare problems, the world economy. Hans Selye, who was the father of modern stress research, compares this independent achievement focus to the development of a cancer, whose most characteristic feature is that it cares only for itself. It feeds on the other parts of its own host until it kills the host, and thus commits biological suicide, since a cancer cell cannot live except within the body in which it started its reckless, egocentric development. Now, to some extent, as a society, we're on a ladder that's leaning against the wrong wall. We're living with the illusion of independence, but this paradigm is not creating the quality of life results we desire. To change the results, we need to change the paradigm. What empowers us to be able to create the synergistic whole that is far greater than the sum of its parts, to create this rich interdependence, is our unique human endowments. Now, in the interdependent reality, we're dealing with a space between stimulus and response in others as well as in ourselves. And as we do, we find that we can use these unique human endowments to interact with other people with integrity. Self-awareness empowers us to have other awareness. Because we know how to listen to our own heart, we can also listen to the hearts of other people. We can step out of our autobiography and seek to understand. We can stop seeing people as just a reflection of ourselves, looking at everything that they do in terms of how it affects our time and our world. We can stop seeing them merely as resources to get done what we want to get done. We can go beyond this narcissistic stage and we can value the difference in people. We can be willing to be influenced. Because we have a changeless core, we can be willing to be changed. We can have humility and respect for other people. We can see their weaknesses as opportunities to help, to love, and to make a difference. What about conscience? Because we understand conscience, we can know what it is to be a part of this collective conscience. We value working together with people to discover true north, and we have the humility to realize that our own understanding may be limited by our scripting. Other people may have insight and experience that we don't have, and it's deeply satisfying to create with others a shared vision and values that empower us to achieve first things together. Through our independent will, we can work to achieve interdependent will. This is agreeing to work together in win-win ways to accomplish worthwhile purposes. We can create structures and systems that support interdependent effort. And as truly independent individuals, then we can come together to accomplish common purposes that benefit the family, the group, the organization, and society as a whole. What about creative imagination? We can contribute our own creative imagination to the incredible process of creative synergy. We can help unleash tremendous creative potential in other people and be open and ready to be surprised by the synergistic results. We can create third alternative solutions that are far more creative, more appropriate, more workable, and more rewarding than any solution we could ever come up with on our own. Our input can become part of a kaleidoscope that creates dramatic new results when we interact with other people in the problem-solving process. So it's these essential endowments, these interdependent endowments now, that empower us to create rich relationships, to be a friend to someone, to give honest feedback, to communicate in authentic ways, so that instead of dependence or codependence or counterdependence, we can exercise effective and synergistic interdependence. We can work effectively together with others to accomplish common goals. We can create powerful teams that build on the strengths of each individual and make their weaknesses irrelevant. We can do first things first together in powerful and effective ways. Is it more important to get a job done efficiently or to take time to empower an employee or a child to do it, both now and in the future? Which choice is going to have the greater impact on the quality of your time, the time of others, the time of the organization, and not only the time, but the results? Is it more important to spend time supervising and controlling others, or to release the tremendous creative potential in other people so that they govern themselves? Is it more important to schedule your time to efficiently solve the problems created by conflicting expectations, or to take the time to work with other people and clarify expectations up front? Is it more important to spend time trying to solve problems created by lack of communication, or to build the relationships that make effective communication possible? Can you see how much more powerful this fourth generation, this people-focused generation, is, how much more effective it is in terms of just what we call time management, but even more important in terms of quality of life and quality of results?
Now the authors will discuss the importance of sharing a common vision in organizations and in the family.
I remember an interesting experience when I was visiting a client at their R&D center in the East. This organization had a multi-million-dollar new building. They created consumer products. My assignment was to help them develop a time management training program for their people because it was very evident that people were very, very busy. They were rushing all the time. And so it was felt like if we could just train them in time management, everything would get better. We were anxious to really make this effective. And so I spent a day interviewing individuals in the organization to be able to custom design the program to really meet their needs. That was an interesting experience. We walked up on the first office, and the individual we were to visit first was a man. He was sitting there at his desk looking out the window over the top of his glasses, stacks of material all over the office, all over his table, obviously very busy, one hand on the computer, one hand on a notepad, looking over his glasses out the window and seeing us coming. Nodded his head to acknowledge our presence as we stood at the door waiting, went ahead and worked on his computer for a few more minutes, finally punched the send button and sat back and says, "Oh, okay, fine, we're ready now." Got up, walked over, shook my hand, talked to the director of the department. They just kind of looked at each other. "Yeah, busy? You too? Yeah, me too. Oh, you can't believe it, Jess." Talked about how heavy things were and how it was going for a minute and said, "Well, okay, I'll take over now. Fine, fine." Then turned around to me, pointed to the table, walked over, picked up several stacks, put them on the floor, cleared a little place so we could sit down. They sat down, I sat down, looked at me, said, "Okay, ready? Go." And I started the interview. Well, we finished, and he escorted me down the hall to the next office, next appointment. Same kind of office, you look at it. There were stacks of paper on the table and around the desk, and the computer was there. And so we walked up. This time it was a woman. She was looking out over the top of her glasses, had one hand on the computer, one hand on the notepad. They acknowledged our presence and said, just a moment, went and made a few more entries into the computer, pressed send, got up, welcomed us, and they talked back and forth a little bit. How's it going? Oh, yeah, tough. Busy. Me too. Yeah, it's right. Okay, well, we'll see you later. Right, fine, bye. Host left, went over to the table in the office, picked up some stacks of material, put them down on the floor, cleared a little place, motioned for me to sit down. I sat down, looked at me, and basically said, okay, ready? Go. I started that interview. It was time to finish. We got up. It was almost a complete replay from office to office. I couldn't believe it. In each case, offices were just crowded with stacks of material left and right. They always take a few minutes to acknowledge how busy it was with each other before they started the interview. And then it's the same kind of thing. Rush, rush, urgency was just dripping everywhere. And that's where the whole day went. You know, there was another interesting characteristic as we walked through this building from office to office. I've noticed this before, and I'm sure it's subconscious on the people's part. But when we walked down the hallways between offices, the pace of walking was fairly normal. As we'd approach the office and the glass window where people could see each other, the pace actually increased. People would be walking faster, like they were anxious on the way to go somewhere, projecting this sense of bustle and hustle and urgency. I don't mean that as a put down, because I think it happens to all of us in different situations. We get so caught up in urgency as a counterfeit for what's important that it becomes a habit, a lifestyle, and it helps create the culture with each other. Urgency is sometimes a counterfeit for intensity, and it's a counterfeit for importance. They're different things. Well, I went back to the director's office at the end of the day and sat down with her, and she said, well, what have you learned and what should we focus on in the training program? I said, I really don't feel you ought to have the program. She said, what? I don't understand. Weren't people busy? Aren't they behind? Don't they need help with time? I said, well, yes, in many ways, but I don't think time management's the core problem. I suspect from what I've heard that there's some major problem in this division. From the comments, it's if maybe some senior people are in the midst of some kind of big battle and conflict, and people are very insecure, they're not sure what's happening, priorities aren't clear, people are not sure what to be working on, they feel like something's dramatic going to happen. I think that the scurrying around and the rushing is primarily a symptom of not being really clear what's important. And so there's almost a subconscious justification that they are the most important worker because look at all they do. And to train and teach time management principles until that core issue is somewhat resolved, I think at this point would be counterproductive and people wouldn't really be ready to listen or to understand. Well, she sat back and said, boy, it's right. She says, everybody knows we do have a major battle going on between two senior vice presidents on research priorities, product strategies, and there are definite camps, and people suspect one of these days one of them is going to win, and there's going to be dramatic changes. The degree to which urgency tends to dominate a culture, whether it's a family or in a business setting, often is a dramatic indicator to the degree to which importance is not the focus. There's not a shared vision of what's really important. What are the priorities? And our society is such nowadays that urgency takes over. Do you relate? Is your organization in this situation where urgency has become the excuse for not sharing vision on what's important? In organizations, it tends to be a rule that the degree to which urgency dominates the culture is usually the degree to which shared vision does not. One of our client organizations not too long ago went and sent some of their senior people to visit some of the Deming Award-winning companies in Japan. These are the companies that had won the Deming Award for quality, which is a very tightly measured, very prestigious and difficult award to get. And they were benchmarking, they were looking to find out what was being done that would help raise their standards and criteria. One of the pieces of information they gathered is the percentage of managers' time that was spent working in each of these four quadrants. First, what percentage of time would you think was spent in quadrant one of managers in those companies that had won the Deming Award? It came out to be between 20 and 25%. What percentage of time would you think was spent doing quadrant two kinds of activities? Remember those things which are important, but maybe not quite as urgent. Planning, preparation, listening, working on the systems instead of just in the systems. But it was high. In fact, it ranged between 65 and 80%. Now, what about quadrant three? Those things which are urgent, but maybe not that important. It was down to about 15%. And quadrant four, the things that are neither urgent nor important, came out less than 1%. Now, the same organization that gathered that data from the Deming winners came back and gathered some information on their own organization. They found out the figures were somewhat different. The first big surprise came in quadrant one. They thought there'd be a huge difference. Actually, the difference was not that wide. They came out between 25 and 30%. So they found out that they were spending a little more time in quadrant one, but not a huge amount more. But the big difference came when they started talking about quadrant two. In quadrant two, they found that their own organization was spending about 15% of their time, compared to 65 to 80 to the Deming Award winners. The problem seems to be doing a lot that feels urgent, but really not that important. Now, if our paradigm is an urgency paradigm, when the sense of importance of the particular situation starts to fade, what quadrant do we end up in? The urgency just drives us right down to the bottom to quadrant three, where now it's urgent still, because that's driving, but not as important. Now, as a team, as a group, as a family, in a relationship, how do you define importance? Well, that's that shared vision of what's important. And it's till it's shared, then the whole organization doesn't take on those characteristics. And because it's more difficult in many ways to create a shared vision, it's an interdependent reality, and you have to work at it, you have to communicate, you have to find new alternatives, you have to overcome these perception blocks that we've talked about to get to new levels of understanding. Because we don't have understanding and share a vision of what's important, what happens? Urgency takes over, because in our society, urgency is always out there, it's always doing something, and so that becomes the dominant factor. Now, what is the cost of that in an organization? What is the cost of that in a team or a family? We're spending our time running from morning till night, doing left and right. But are we thinking about what's coming next? How to improve the systems? How to transform the time so that we don't keep solving the same problems the same way, week after week, day after day? Do we change the very nature of the problem? Well, that takes quadrant two time. We have to get into a different way of thinking. So the challenge then is to be able to, with others, come to a common set of expectations and share a vision on what's important.